Now, here's a quote I saw on the internet the other day. It's talking about the possible damage from relying on the latest information technology. Quote, "This invention will produce forgetfulness in the minds of those who learn to use it because they will not practice their memory. That invention, not the smartphone or the internet or chatbot-assisted searches, it's writing." And that quote was from over 2,000 years ago. Our next guest says there's a long history of human anxiety about the impact of technology and access to information and how it could hurt the way we think. He traces that history in a new piece in Eon magazine. Joe Stadalnik is an independent researcher, writer, and editor. He's a scholar in residence at the Newberry Library in Chicago. I talked to him yesterday. Now, before we get to some of the specific examples you write about, it was kind of amazing to me that whether we go back 1 week or 2.5 millennia, people have been worried about being distracted by, in effect, too much information. What are some of the common themes you ran across, whatever historical period you dug into?
One of the common themes you see everywhere is this anxiety that there's way too much to read and not enough time to read it. And the effect is that people are not only losing focus, but they're focusing on the wrong things. So all the way back to the Roman philosopher Seneca, you have Seneca had a famous quote that the abundance of books is a distraction. And this is a platitude that you hear repeated over and over again in the Western tradition, but you see echoes of it in China as well. The 12th century philosopher Zhu Xi, who also complains that people are reading sloppily these days because they have way too many books at their disposal and the wrong kinds of books. So this is an old anxiety.
And the amazing thing to me is in some of the time periods we're talking about here, like if I had, 30 parchments or books, that was a pretty big library for the time. It's not like I just wonder at these people if they walked into a library today, how overwhelmed it would look to them.
Yeah, it would have been overwhelming. I think the number for, the largest libraries in the Renaissance or the early modern period would have had books probably in the thousands. And I think there are many public libraries today who have thousands of books. And back then, that would have been an astounding number.
I want to name some more names now. The oldest person you reference in the book, or the furthest back, we're talking like 2,400 years ago or so, the Greek philosopher Plato, and he shares a little story about the invention of writing and a debate, as he describes it, between two different Egyptian gods on what writing is going to do for, or I guess do to, people. What are the two sides of that debate?
Yeah, Plato is writing a dialogue, and one of the characters of the dialogue is Socrates. And I believe it's Socrates who tells the anecdote of the inventor of writing in ancient Egypt. Even to them, this was happening in the distant past. The ancient Egyptian inventor of writing goes to the king and presents his invention as a kind of miraculous thing that will extend the human memory. He says, "This invention will make the Egyptians wiser and will improve their memories, for it is an elixir of memory and wisdom." But the king is immediately suspicious, and he responds that this invention will produce forgetfulness in the minds of those who learn to use it, because they will not practice their memory. And he says that this is not a technology of memory, but of reminding. So already in ancient Greece, for Plato, this fear that the technology of writing is changing the way we think was already old.
And then another character you bring up is Petrarch. Now, he's a scholar, a poet in Italy in the late 1300s. And this is still, if I have my timing right, before the printing press is hitting Europe and having this explosion of books. And he, like some of the other people you mentioned, is already complaining that there are too many books and it's making us distracted and dumber.
Yeah, I think he's being a little, truly he's probably ambivalent. He knows that more books is probably better for the world, but he's kind of voicing these certain reservations. This was before the printing press, but it was during a time when books were becoming more manuscript books, handwritten books were becoming more abundant. And he's talking about people who have had the good fortune of owning many, many books and are collecting them. And he says that to own many books is not nourishing the mind with literature, but killing it and burying it with the weight of things.
I laugh along a little bit because so many of things you're saying from 800 years ago, 2000 years ago, like I've seen arguments like this on the internet, like over the last 2 weeks. You looked at some of the modern literature on this. This is not your specialty, I know, but as you look at some of the, you know, rip from the headline things, the same arguments still happening today as, you know, with the arrival of mass production of handwritten books?
Yeah, what I found interesting about the conversations today, a lot of them feature a writer who has decided that the phone is a problem, their laptop is a problem, and they kind of go off to the wilderness and they kind of reconnect with older media, with books, and then they come back wiser and with a new relationship to technology. And a lot of this is about, a lot of them say, a lot of them return to reading novels. And one of the things that I discuss in my essay is how novel reading and novels themselves were the dangerous technology that was breaking readers' brains in the early 19th century. We had physicians advising patients that novels produce nervous habits. They excessively stimulate the mind with their interesting and melting tales. So it was just ironic to me that, or maybe it was ironic, but also gave me a kind of different perspective on how these anxieties look from a vantage point of the future. No one worries today that novels are breaking our brains. In fact, we've gone in the complete opposite direction. And we worry that we're not reading enough novels.
We're talking to Joe Stadalnik, talking about his piece in Eon magazine titled "We've Always Been Distracted," looking at fears about information overload and new technology going back literally thousands of years. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Joe Stadalnik about his piece in Eon magazine called "We've Always Been Distracted," about the long history of worries that information technology is making us more distracted and less smart. Now, I wonder, you're somebody who studies people like Geoffrey Chaucer, the Canterbury Tales guy, among other things. Do you ever wonder, like, you know, can you connect with his brain, given that, you know, he probably had to handwrite this with these fairly scarce materials? Versus, you know, somebody in our age who might be looking things up at a computer and typing about it. Do you feel like it's hard to bridge the gap between our mind as we think and write now and a Geoffrey Chaucer type author's mind?
I think so. I think sometimes about how my own writing has developed, and I've developed a voice or a style that I think of as my own, but is in fact entirely shaped by my history as a writer writing on word processors. I remember writing on the old Macintosh SE in my house as a five-year-old, that I've always associated writing with word processing and the ability to cut and paste, to delete, to edit and re-edit and re-edit before committing to anything. And I do have a hard time imagining what it would be like in a world where you have pen and parchment is scarce, and poetry is something that is as much spoken and heard as it is written down and read. For me, that's just not been my experience. So that's one of the many gulfs that you're having to cross when trying to connect with an author who has lived 600 years ago. It's not just about what they knew or what they believed, but also how they read and wrote. And that's really what draws me to study medieval manuscripts and these kind of esoteric objects hidden away in libraries, why I think I'm so drawn to them.
Now, reading your piece and then thinking about it for the interview, I've kind of like, I started categorizing different parts of my life where I'm glad I have this reference, or there are places where you can't do it. So like, I have an address book. I'm very glad I don't have to memorize the address of every single human I know. That is a very fine use of technology. But I think of, you know, a stage actor, they have to do it the old-fashioned way, learn every single word. Or a surgeon, I really hope that they don't have to consult a lot of reference material mid-surgery. I don't know. It seems like we could compartmentalize ways in which we use technology in one way and have to really still rely on our brains in the old-fashioned way in another.
Yeah, this is the age-old problem of information management, that we have things that we'll need to know, and we're all constantly making decisions about what we're going to commit to memory and what we won't, and what kind of tools are at our disposal to store that information. And for those who are curious, there's a fantastic book by the historian Anne Blair, who describes or who collects many of the examples I've been talking about today in a history of information management, and how over the course of time we've developed different strategies to select what we need to remember and what we need to write down, how we've developed strategies to store that information, to summarize that information. And she's really interested in that history of information management. That's maybe not what we think of when we think about all the intellectual progress that one could track from the Middle Ages to now. She's sort of tracking how all that information was stored and handled in these different and innovative ways over that time. So your address book is one of the strategies that it's a physical handwritten address book, Rob?
It is, yes.
A manuscript
address book. Old-fashioned, yeah.
And that's another thing you see too, is that technologies don't just disappear when some new version becomes available. You've stuck with your manuscript address book, and other people might see it as anachronistic or old-fashioned. But these old technologies do have staying power. Like, manuscript books didn't disappear when the printing press was invented.
Joe, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Joe Stadalnik, independent researcher, writer, and editor. He's a scholar in residence at the Newberry Library in Chicago. His piece in Eon Magazine, "We've Always Been Distracted," is linked at wpr.org/centraltime.